This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the host of Progressive Radio and the editor of The Progressive Magazine. Today we're going to be talking about the Green Party. And with me is a candidate for the Green Party presidential nomination, Peter Camejo, who you might remember as the person who ran for governor in California on the Green Party ticket against Arnold Schwarzenegger. Peter Camejo, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you.
What was that like, running against Arnold?
Well, you know, it was a historic moment. On September 3rd, the first nationally televised debate in which a candidate of a party more progressive than the Democratic Party was ever in a nationally televised debate. And the debate on September 24th was the largest audience ever in the history of the United States for a political debate, larger than any presidential debate. And it was amazing that in that context, the Green Party was able to be present and talk about it. And Arnold, the one thing I want to say to the listeners is Arnold's a lot smaller than he appears in the movies. I don't know how they do it. I guess they get the camera on the floor and it looks up. And, you know, he's polite and everything like that that you would expect. But what really happened in California was an angry rebellion against the Democrats. And people saw Arnold as an independent. They didn't see him as a Republican. They thought of Tom McClintock as the Republican. And so I think, you know, what we have now in California is a continuation of the previous policies of really cutting social services, lowering the taxes on the rich, and increasing them on the average person through the sales tax, et cetera.
What do you think about people who said, look, at this whole recall process is out of control. We shouldn't have had that. This was an anti-democratic thing to do. We should let the process of just having the elections go the way they were, and why should some Republican rich millionaire be able to finance this recall election? What was your response to that?
Well, the recall election was actually the best election we've ever had in California and the worst election we've ever had in California. There's a lot of truth in these criticisms you hear. The law is absolutely absurd the way it's written. Actually, the Democratic Party rewrote it in the 70s, and then they complained about the nature of it because no one thought it would ever be used. You see, it was 31 attempts to have a recall for governor and never made it.
The ceiling on signatures was so high. Is that right?
Very high ceiling, very hard to get. And the public doesn't go for it. I mean, people just don't want to recall somebody. You have to understand what Governor Davis achieved. This guy hit a world record. We never had more income in the state of California in the 5 years he was there. You have no idea. We were growing at over 10% per year compounded in income into the state. The average is 2.5%. And instead of ending up with a $30 billion surplus, which is what he should have had, he ended up with a $38 billion deficit. He gave $43 billion to the energy companies right at the top of the market and then tried to hide those contracts and put in those contracts that they could pollute because California would pay their fines. And anyway, it was so amazing what Davis did that there was this enormous reaction against him in California.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Peter Camejo, who knows a little thing or two about business since he is one of the founders of Progressive Asset Management, a socially responsible investment company. What did you draw from that election in California and your participation as a Green in it?
Well, the Green Party's influence has grown. I people in most other states do not realize how strong the Green Party is getting in California. We are now the second party in the Inner Bay Area. In San Francisco, we just came within an inch of electing the first Green mayor in a major city of the United States. We got 47%, and you have to understand this was against the Democrats and Republicans both endorsed the same candidate. So it was Green against Democrats and Republicans. Now, it turned out the Democratic Party split. A whole wing of the Democratic Party came over to the Green Party and worked with us. In fact, the majority of the elected Greens in San Francisco, there's 11 supervisors that run San Francisco. 6 endorsed the Green. 3 endorsed the Democrat. By the way, this Democrat was on which everybody knows now in the country, Gavin Newsom, because of what he's done on gay rights and the marriage. He was actually on George Bush's voter slate. He gave money to George Bush in the year 2000. So he, on issues of finance, economics, rights of labor, housing, these issues, he's very conservative. But on some social issues, he's very progressive. And of course, we support him on that. But so the message out of that for the Greens was the sympathy and the recognition of the Greens has grown. And I'll tell you another really interesting thing that is happening in California is the demographics of the Green vote has completely shifted.
How so?
It's now the poorest people of California who vote for us. Let me give it. It's against the average number of European Americans who vote for us. African Americans, 2-1 more voters. In fact, it's the race group that gives us the most votes now in California.
Proportional to population.
Yes, very important point. Latino is the second, and they're almost neck and neck. Young people and the poorest people. And that's a shift from the concept of European-American environmentalists as being the electoral base of the Green Party. In the northern part of California, there's a place we call the Green Belt, which goes from Santa Cruz to the border with Canada, from San Francisco to the border with Nevada, which is giving a very high vote. But the Bay Area and San Francisco in particular has now become a very strong hold, and everybody's watching that to see now what happens.
Why do you think the Green Party has stuck, whereas other efforts at building a third party from the left haven't? And you've been involved in this for 30 years. You're involved with the Socialist Workers Party.
Right.
What's the key to the Green success?
Well, I think in part that the what we call the left in America has really, first of all, doesn't talk English. It's been incomprehensible to the people. And the Green Party, even though its origin, too, is influenced by Europe and developments out of Europe, he is much more now tied and talks the language that can be understood. I think a lot of the issues that the left in the 60s and the 70s raised were incomprehensible from the way the message was delivered.
Do you have an example?
If you use terms that Americans are not – let me give it a beautiful example is the word socialist. What is socialism? Okay, to an average American, it means the government run things, or it means it's a failed economic system. It didn't work.
Or it's gulags.
It did something they did in Russia, and it leads to totalitarianism and so on. So, why do you want to use words that are not understood by the people you're trying to talk to? Let me give you an example. Back in the 1870s in America, large demonstrations were called monster. The leaflet said that we're going to have a monster demonstration. Now, in America today, if you say the word monster demonstration, people will think it's going to include, monsters, I mean, it's just not going to be people. It's absurd to use terms that are incomprehensible to people when you're trying to explain. So if what you mean by socialism is, let's say, that production should be based on human needs instead of profits, or that there should be more democracy, that the average person should have control, well, why don't you say those words? Why not just say you believe democracy is needed? We don't really have a democratic system. So I think that the Green Party got beyond that, and the Green Party is talking now in America about some really crucial issues. Defense of our Constitution and Bill of Rights, which you see the Patriot Act, both Democrats and Republicans voted for it.
No, I understand the Greens are really active in this Defend the Bill of Rights committees that have passed now in 257 cities or something like that.
By the way, I personally feel very strongly about this. I think that is imperative that we start unifying everyone who is for defense of the Constitution of the United States. That doesn't mean that we believe the Constitution is perfect or whatever. But the Constitution and the Bill of Rights guarantee the American people a framework from which we can organize and try to change America to a better way. The truth is that the Patriot Act was an illegal conspiracy against the American people because it outlaws the Fourth Amendment, and they didn't go through the due process, which is they have to go to the states. And they all know this. The thing is the conscious level of which the Democrats, it was 99-1, only from Wisconsin, one senator, Feingold, had the courage to raise his hand against this in the Senate. It was 99-1. And to me, when a Paul Wellstone and a Barbara Boxer raises their hands against the U.S. Constitution, knowing they're part of an illegal conspiracy, it tells you the danger we're in. And when American citizens can be imprisoned with no charges and no lawyer, we are in danger of losing our freedom, which is essential for us to be able to organize and correct other problems that we have in America.
You're listening to Peter Camejo, who ran for governor of California on the Green Party ticket last time around and is running this time. So that's one issue of great importance to the Greens. I think you're about to rattle off some other ones, so rattle away.
Well, I mean, I think we're opposed, the issue of the war is the overriding issue in this campaign. And, 20 years of supporting Saddam Hussein, then 10 years of illegally bombing Iraq, and now a military occupation violation of all international law. These are the types of policies which are going to generate hostility to America and that endanger America, creates a fanatical opposition to us, and that you can't justify it. I mean, you never can justify terrorism on any side. It's always negative and a terrible thing that has to be stopped. But the policies the United States has followed are the policies that generate this. We need to support the rule of law in the world, support the world court, try to see if the wealth that the Middle East has is used to develop those areas of the world and improve the standard of living and education. We have to support forces for democracy. I mean, all over the Middle East, we support dictatorships. And the United States has armed them, supported them, like Saddam Hussein. So this, to us, is the central point of this campaign. What's Kerry saying? He wants more soldiers. He criticized Spain for saying it's going to pull its troops out. Only seems to disagree with the way Bush has done it, not what Bush is doing. And that's why we feel a Green or Ralph Nader has to run for president, because that point of view has to be heard. That is, a voice must speak that tells the truth about what George Bush is doing.
Amazingly, and Kerry said in one of the debates that Bush did not need to go to Congress to get permission to go to war in Iraq. Well, that Clinton had gone to Bosnia, and Clinton had gone to Kosovo, and Clinton gone to East Timor. Clinton had gone to Haiti without going to Congress. So why did Bush? So the conclusion to draw from that is, what? Kerry doesn't believe in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution.
Well, I think most Americans don't know that Article 1, Section 8 very explicitly says we cannot go to war unless Congress declares war. And this is being violated all the time. You know, my opinion is the founders of this country, George Washington, Tom Jefferson, if it really were true that people turn over in their graves, they would become important sources of energy, because we are now living in a period in which the Constitution is just being violated all the time, especially around the issue of war. It would be really valuable to have a voice out there, and I'm hoping Ralph Nader really puts a lot of focus on this, that we have to respect the law. And people who say, oh, no, but terrorism, you have to allow anything because terrorism is a terrible thing. Listen, Hitler was a terrible thing. Everybody's a terrible thing. There's all kinds of terrible things in the world. And it doesn't mean that American people have to give up their freedoms and their rights and their constitution because the Democrats and Republicans suddenly get it into their heads to try to take it away from us.
That's the voice of Peter Camejo, who is a Green. He ran for the governorship of California as a Green last time around. He is technically, I believe, a candidate for the Green Party presidential nomination, but you're talking about Ralph Nader a lot, so
yes,
explain that
Green
riddle.
The Green Party is confronting a difficult situation, and it's internally divided over whether it should run its own candidate or maybe endorse Ralph Nader or possibly do a combination of the two or some other choice. And I have offered my name within the Green Party for people who are not sure what's the best thing to do and want to go to the convention to feel the discussion. But I lean towards working with the effort that Ralph Nader is. And I want to say to everybody listening, there's many people who are saying Ralph Nader shouldn't run because they want Kerry to win. And I want to explain something. We Greens understand, and we're not angry at people who, even though they agree with us, will vote for Kerry because they want to stop Bush, because these individuals are victims of an electoral system that doesn't allow runoffs, doesn't allow really free elections. So you're a victim. You're not the problem. The problem is we don't have free elections. But the worst thing to do is to say that the point of view that the Green Party represents shouldn't be heard. And the people who maybe disagree with you, that maybe think it's better to vote Green than Kerry, that they shouldn't have a candidate. Think about it. That's a totalitarian concept. That is, you want to eliminate the right of those who disagree with you from being able to run or have a candidate. That's never the solution.
But just to be fair to the nation and to others of their ilk, and the progressive was similar in what we said about Ralph Nader. It wasn't that we were saying Ralph doesn't have a right to run. It was questioning the wisdom of his running this time, because Bush has been so bad, bad on civil liberties, so bad on the Iraq War.
But let's think out what the logic of this really is. What you're saying is, I want everybody to vote for Kerry. And if Ralph runs, then somebody may decide to vote for Ralph. And what this really is utter arrogance towards the people, towards the voters. That is, they're so stupid and I'm so bright that I want to manipulate which candidates exist so that they don't vote differently than what I want. The point is, you can say to Ralph Nader, we would urge you to endorse Kerry and not to endorse the Greens or for you to run, but not to say to him, we have to silence you. He's already made it clear he's running. So the problem that the nation and the progressive and the rest have is that they claim they agree with Ralph Nader, disagree with Kerry, and they believe in democracy, and their version of democracy is you vote for what you're against. Go and vote for a guy who's for the war, for the Patriot Act, against the Kyoto Protocol, for cutting taxes on corporations, which are already so low. I don't know if people realize corporations used to provide us over 30% of the income to the federal government. Now it's 10%. In California, it's the lowest tax rate ever in the history of California for corporations. And Kerry's first thing on taxes is not to cut the taxes on the poor, which have been rising and rising, but to cut it on the people who are not paying taxes, which, of course, is the rich and the corporations.
Well, I hear that, Peter Camejo. But, you know, it's not quite that simple. And I do have to say, the Progressive's nonprofit, we don't endorse candidates. And we're not in
you
that.
You de-endorse.
We don't de-endorse.
You tell which ones not
we
to just, run.
We don't really de-endorse either. And I actually respect people, and I really resented last time around when people were saying, you don't have a choice, you've got to vote for Gore, and how dare you? And I was getting a lot of that because people knew, you know, which way I was leaning. How dare you even consider to vote for Nader? And, I respect people who, and I have done this before, have voted for third-party candidates that weren't as high profile as the Greens, for that matter. And my predecessor at the Progressive took the anarchist position that he wasn't going to vote, period, for president because he didn't want to give his assent to this false social contract and say that he agrees that this is a democratic system giving it his ballot. And so, I respect people whichever way they go, and it's always legitimate, in my opinion, for people to vote their conscience. God forbid in a democracy that we do that. However, at this stage, and you knew I was going to come to a however, at this stage, with Bush as bad as he is, and I am so worried about the civil liberties assault in this country, the new McCarthyism, this talk even from Tommy Franks that maybe if we're attacked again by terrorists with weapons of mass destruction, we're going to have martial law in this country. And it wasn't just Tommy Franks. It was Condoleezza Rice's deputy, Wayne Downing, who said in the Washington Post a couple years prior to that, use the exact phrase, martial law might have to be imposed sometimes in this country. That's scary stuff. And also this messianic militarism of Bush. This, how many countries is he going to occupy at one time? And he thinks he's got God on his shoulder whispering in his ear at every time he goes to attack another country. So this, to me, is qualitatively worse, a much graver risk than we've seen here in this country, at least since Nixon and maybe way before. And at some historical moments, it may be necessary to opt for something a little less idealistic and more pragmatic just to help save the world, if you will.
Well, I agree with the whole point you just made until that last little phrase. I think that Ralph Nader running hurts George Bush because Kerry, the Democrats are right now agreeing with his premises, and that increases the chance Bush will be reelected. In fact, in the whole Gore-Bush campaign, Gore kept accepting his premises. And in the framework that we're in right now, I'm not saying this in general because it's not true in general, but in the framework we're in right now, Ralph Nader being out there attacking the premises of George Bush's policies and saying exactly what you just said about the dangers to democracy in America, which Kerry will not say because he voted for the Patriot Act and Kerry is for cutting our going against the Constitution of the United States. I think it works exactly the opposite. I think Nader's campaign actually lowers the chances Bush will be reelected. But that's because of a conjuncture. In other words, if he's able to convince people that what Bush is doing is terrible, many of them will then decide not to vote for Bush and may vote for either Kerry or Nader. And this is an impact. I believe what I'm saying is actually true. But let me say that silencing voices is plays into it. And I think it's a big mistake to think that we can't lose our democracy and our rights under the Democratic Party. That is a big, giant mistake. They may do it more intelligently and more sophisticated than Bush does it. Bush is cruder and easier to see. But I think there is a real danger here, and I want to join with you in saying that, regardless of whatever differences we may have, the Green Party and the Progressive Magazine, on some issues of how best to defend ourselves. We are both in total agreement that there is this danger and that we all have to take it very
seriously.
And
I love a lot of the work that the Greens are doing. But I just think part of it is just a stall for time right now. I mean, a lot of us...
Well, I understand the arguments
are so
for your
desperate
case,
that
and
we don't want to live through another 4 years of not just Bush, but, Wolfowitz and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Ashcroft.
Yeah, well, we got to understand these people didn't get there by accident, you know. The media, you go to Fox Station, CNBC, CNN, they're all supporting them. And this is the power of the money that, you know, 0.1% give 80% of the donations to political figures. And this layer could turn on Bush and knock him out in a second. I mean, Bush is so vulnerable if the media turned on him. This is a guy who can't say four sentences and it's still English. So the point is that this is not just – that's what's really scary about this, is that why is America moving in this direction? Why is it allowing these people and not, you know, stopping them when they're obviously – look, when Bush gave his State of the Union address – he got repeated standing ovations from the Democratic Party when he called for violating international law, all of this stuff. And no media will mention the fact the United States supported Osama bin Laden or Saddam Hussein, that show pictures of Donald Rumsfeld hugging Saddam Hussein. And the Democrats can't talk about it because they supported them too. And we need voices. We need Greens. We need Ralph Nader out there telling the truth that in the end, you know, we can go back and forth on this forever, but let's put it this way. We both, I think, understand each other's argument, and this is part of American history. It's a passing thing which let us hope that what you're for and what I'm for, what the Greens are for, and what people who are inside the Democratic Party that do favor the Bill of Rights and the Constitution that eventually are current will triumph in preventing the denial of democratic rights.
But Nader says, you know, he's going to, as you have articulated, he's going to help beat Bush and that he's going to take more votes from the Republicans than he would from the Democrats. But what happens if, you know, November 1st comes around, there's a Gallup poll says he's taken 3-1 Democrats?
Well, you got to understand what you're really saying is, careful the way you say it, because Nader doesn't vote anybody's except for his own vote. You're saying if people decide, in other words, what are you going to do about it? Put a gun to their head and tell them don't vote for what you're for? The point is you want to manipulate those people. You have to convince me and other people about your position.
Right.
You can't manipulate it by saying Ralph shouldn't run. Ralph, there should be no choice. The point is Ralph is out there saying Bush is the greater danger. This is what I'm fighting. And I'm attacking Kerry for going along with Bush. And I'm urging people to vote for me to protest this. Now, each voter will decide in each state, since we have this nutty system where the guy who wins the election, the guy who loses the election can end up being the president. You can imagine them explaining that in Iraq to the Iraqis. You know, oh, why don't you follow the American system? Guy who loses the vote becomes the president. Probably the Iraqis would say, yeah, we know we had a system like that. And, you know, this is what we're up against. And there'll be no voice against George Bush if Ralph Nader doesn't run that people will actually hear.
Peter Camejo, tell me about the other choice that the Greens have. It seems that they have three choices. Endorse the Nader campaign.
Yes.
Endorse another candidate. Your name there is almost their pro forma. David Cobb is running an aggressive campaign to win nomination on its merits. And the third choice is not endorse and not run a presidential candidate.
Yeah.
Explain the other two options. You've talked about the Nader option.
Well, no, I think those are the three choices. And let me explain to the listeners that there probably is sympathy for the third position, that is, that we don't do anything, okay? It tends not to be very strong among the people who actually show up for meetings. But we just had a vote in California where the Green Party is the largest, and I got 75.4% of the vote was for me, 11% for David Cobb, and about 10.8% for Lorna Seltzman. Probably realistically, the only thing we can do would be either endorse Nader, run David Cobb for president, or we could endorse Nader and work with him and also run David Cobb. It's not impossible that we do that, do a dual endorsement type thing, and so have someone who's very specifically a Green running while we encourage and help Ralph Nader. We also want to say this to everybody, I know I'm repeating myself, but I think it's worth repeating that, you know, we respect those people like the Progressive that disagree with us and say, look, It isn't that we agree with everything Kerry's saying. We think the Greens are saying a lot of valid arguments here, but we urge people to vote for Kerry. Okay, this is what democracy is about. We'll argue about it. We'll discuss it. And we all agree on one thing, that the country's moving in the wrong direction. And it's sad to watch the Democratic Party voting for all of this, giving standing ovations to the Republicans. In our opinion, Republican Party cannot exist without the Democrats because the Democrats give it cover, co-opt the opposition. If you remove the Democratic Party, a massive opposition would develop to the Republicans. And so our battle is not only against the Republicans, but exposing what the Democrats are doing in actually protecting George Bush.
Is the country moving in the wrong direction, or are the leaders of the country moving in the wrong direction?
Well, that's a very good way to say it, and I think that's a better way to say it, what you're saying. I think there is the people who control the United States, the people who have the power, the people who have the money and the control of the media, they're moving in the wrong direction. I think that in America, there are a lot of very positive. Look at gay marriage. I mean, who would have believed in my generation that we would ever see this? I'm so proud of our mayor in New Paltz, who's 26-year-old, the courage he has shown and how he's standing up. And I'm very proud of Gavin Newsom, though I totally disagree with him on other issues. I honor and respect him for what he has done. I think this is a turning point in the battle, finally, for total human rights for gays and lesbians. And I think that this is an example of positive things that are happening in the United States.
And even on this front, you have the pragmatic Democrats saying, no, this is a bad time for this. This is going to hurt us. This is even, you know, Barney Frank is saying that this is, you know, if it feels so good, don't do it. That's basically his attitude.
Well, yeah, you know, I do think that we got to get a democracy in this country. I mean, you know, when you say to somebody, is John Kerry for gay marriage? Who knows? You know he's going to say he's against it because the polls show that.
Well, so, the great thing about the gay marriage phenomenon that's going on right now is it isn't, you know, some elitist judges doing it, though the Massachusetts Supreme Court did kind of kick things into gear. It is people at the grassroots storming, you know, the city county building in San Francisco and going to, in small towns around the country to try to get married.
Right. It's also a generational thing. The youth of this country are for it, and the older people are opposed to it. And it really is a separation of church and state issue. That's what it really is. Because, you know, for people who don't understand that being gay or lesbian is being left-handed, it's just a genetic thing. I mean, you know, people get up and say, oh, but gays chose to be gay. Listen, heterosexuals who are listening to this, do you remember when you chose? You don't choose. This is not something you choose. You're born, like you're born a race. You're born left-handed, right-handed. The whole thing's absurd for us to genetically discriminate. That is, say that people that are different in any form are to be discriminated against. And, you know, the truth is this is coming. This is the world is changing. And this is an important reflection of advances that America is making. But we're going back right now. 95% of the people have made no economic gain over the last 30 years. The rich are getting richer than ever before. Taxes are going down for the rich and for corporations while they go up for the average. We're having a wealth transfer. And these issues aren't heard or understood. In California, one of the great things that happened was when I got on those debates is I could talk to tens of millions of people about this, and it was the first time they were hearing. In fact, I made a little chart of what the real tax rates are in California. I went to every single daily newspaper in California. Not a single one would print the chart. They hide the facts from the people. And I want to thank the Progressive, because I know that a lot of the journals like the Progressive try to keep people informed, try to bring out the facts and let people decide for themselves what their views are.
Peter Kameko, we only have a few seconds left. What is the future of the Green Party?
Well, in California, we're very excited. The fact that we came within an inch of winning in San Francisco, getting 47%. Actually, the night of the election, we won by 10,000. It was only the absentee ballots, and if we had been better organized. Also, the Democrats had a terrible handicap. They only had us outfinanced 10-1, and usually at that ratio, it's an even fight. So, you know, we're very excited that we're going to continue. We have 65 people elected in California, which is really a very small number, but, you know, for a third party starting out and no money, we don't accept money from corporations, whatever, not that they'd give us any, but we're growing. And it's very hard to say. In the history of the United States, it's very difficult for third parties to ever succeed because of the electoral system is set up against them. But, you know, the Green Party is showing enormous support among young people, and that's what's giving us hope.
Well, that's going to have to be the last word. Peter Kameko, really enjoyed the conversation.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.